Everybody, I'm Peter. I'm a recovered alcoholic. Grateful to be alive and sober and at a sacred place called Alcoholics Anonymous. First things first, again, I'd like to thank the group and all of you for allowing me to be here to share over the next few weeks on my experience with this book and what it's done for me. Also, I'd like to take a moment, which we haven't done, and thank the tapers who are working so hard back there making copies of these workshops. So I thank you guys also. This has been an invitation to my spirit by yours, and I take that as a message from my God to be here with you. Working with others is one of the many bright spots in my life that I've come to experience in Alcoholics Anonymous. And as I said a few weeks ago, whether it's one-on-one over a kitchen table, on the phone, or at a workshop setting like this, God has moved me many places, and he's moved me here over the next few weeks, and I treat it that way. Working with others is not only one of the bright spots in my life, but it's vital to what I do and how I be. Not attached to an outcome. I pass a message on. Some take it, some walk away. Get to inventory, most run. But I'm not responsible for that. I am responsible for passing the message on. And the question I'm always asked by my sponsor, what message am I passing on? Is it my message or the message I've had an experience with from this big book? So I'm very grateful to be here. Very grateful to experience freedom. Very grateful to experience God. Very grateful to experience bliss. Very grateful to experience this moment, this breath, here and now. Great technique working with is listen to the silence between the words you speak. It's here now where I experience my God. My past is full of nows, and so is my future. And my job is to be here present with you. When I'm attached to my mind and what my mind's doing and being driven by my mind and being pulled in 20 different directions, not present, what happens to me is I become split. There's duality in my life. I'm living for what I want and living over past regrets. And so when I sit down with another alcoholic, it's awfully difficult for me to pay attention to what they're saying, certainly listen to any silence. If you know working with others, it's not only what they say, it's what they don't say. There's always a tip-off to how they're doing, what's their state, their condition at that moment. And before we get going, I just wanted to share something from a book that I do along with Alcoholics Anonymous and my big book, Not Instead Of. And it's from a book called The Power of Now. It says, when consciousness frees itself from its identification with physical and mental forms, it becomes what we may call pure or enlightened consciousness or presence. Most humans are still in the grip of the egoic mode of consciousness, identified with their mind and run by their mind. If they do not free themselves from their mind in time, they will be destroyed by it. They will experience increasing confusion, conflict, violence, illness, despair, and madness. Egoic mind has become like a sinking ship. If you don't get off, you will go down with it. The collective egoic mind is the most dangerously insane and destructive entity ever to inhabit this planet. What do you think will happen on this planet if human consciousness remains unchanged? If you watch CNN at night, your answer is there. Now, I can't change the world, but I can certainly have an experience with this power and be transformed, and then maybe pass that to someone else. We always start off here with a lot of maybe questions or considerations, and one of the things that have come to me in sitting in meditation is this. I was one of the guys who would sit in the back of the room and gone through the steps and lived in 10, 11, and 12 and swore by that. I would fight to the end of the earth for that. I would defend it. I would have a need to defend it. Instead of now, I don't have a need to defend anything. But I would have a need to defend living in 10, 11, and 12 and not going through the work again. And then what happened to me after about 14 years, I flatlined in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hit a wall and wondering what was going on. And old or former teachers in my life would tell me, you know, redouble spiritual efforts. And I didn't know what that meant. Write more inventory. Do a lot of things. And I was flatlining. And I couldn't get past the wall, couldn't get around it, under it. It was there, and I didn't know what to do anymore. For years, I heard people talking about going through this work over and over and over again, and I thought they were cowardly and weak. and even selfish and self-centered that they would devote that much time to going through the work again. And I had lots of contempt prior to investigation. Well, what God does is He moves you. And He moved me to a place that He painted me into a corner, and there's nowhere else to go but to seek those people who are going through the work again. And that came to me, not from me. And I go through the work again, and great things happen for me. And I've gone through the work again, and even better things have happened for me without being attached to any kind of outcome. So one of the questions I have for us to consider is, some of us hit amends, make our amends, and then get shifted into 10, 11, and 12, and we stay there. And if you're like me, you're going to defend that and fight it out of fear. But why? If I have such an incredible experience going through the work the first time, why would I deny myself going through it again and have a new experience, a deeper relationship with this power I call God? Why would I deny myself that? Why would I have a need to defend living in 10, 11, and 12? Why is there a need to defend? You know, what it really is, I found for myself, is ego and fear keeping me from going through that work again until I was painted into that corner. Another question I was asked to consider was this. It was, Peter, did you eat yesterday? I said, sure, I had breakfast, I had lunch, and I had dinner. So why a need to eat today? So why do I deny my spirit nourishment of constantly going through this work again and having new experiences with this power if I had one a year ago or 2 years ago or 10 years ago? Or am I replaying an experience that happened to me 10 years ago or 15 years ago and just, you know, use an instant replay every time I go into a meeting and work with someone else, relying on a very old experience to deal with current stuff? The great thing about going through this work again is I take a look at current agnosticism when my ego won't let me see it. But by going through the work, things are removed, and I take a look at what hope we get to tonight, chapter to the agnostics, and look at my current agnosticism. A great tool to work with is, you know, one of the questions we asked in chapter 4 is, do I now believe or am even willing to believe? Right? It's one of the questions. Well, first time around, we have no bargaining chips. Yeah, I'm certainly willing. It's got to be better than what I have. And then we do this work a few times, 3, 4, 10, 20 times, whatever it is. We're in Alcoholics Anonymous a few years. And we answer that question based on past experiences. A great tool to do is find out where I don't believe right now. How am I doing right now? Make a list, use page 52, of where I do not believe God is working in my life, where I do not believe God even exists in my life. A great scorecard to see how I'm doing and where I am. Why would I not want to go through this work and have a new experience, a deeper, effective spiritual experience with this power that's been keeping me sober all along? Again, I go back to the words I opened up this workshop with, is seek experience. How's my experience tonight? How am I doing? Last week we did some of chapter 3, and we left off with this guy named Jim who got set up by his illness and then ambushed by his illness. And he used some pretty neat words in there. And over on page 37, and I won't spend a lot of time on Jim, but over on page 37 he uses in the second paragraph, second sentence, he used the word justified to drink by nervousness, anger, worry, depression, jealousy, or the like. And I'd like you to underline that and circle the word justified, because that's just another word for insane thinking. You know, the mind convinces me to go back to a drink, and it justifies the behavior. It has to, in order to get me back to a drink. That word justified is just another word for insane thinking. Earlier on page 34, they used the word baffle and utter, the baffling feature of alcoholism, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. And I found it really important to know what these words mean. Baffle is to puzzle and to perplex, to confuse. And utter is complete and absolute. We're going to see that word utter again show up. Let's go over to page 39. First paragraph, it says, but the actual potential alcoholic, with hardly an exception, will be absolutely, and I like you to underline this, absolutely unable to stop drinking on the basis of self-knowledge. This is a point we wish to emphasize and re-emphasize to smash home upon our alcoholic readers. The question to consider as we take statements and turn them into questions, do I think I can stay stopped on self-knowledge or knowing my triggers or knowing my issues, knowing what things to avoid, all self-knowledge? I have an alcoholic mind, an insane mind, and I'm going to rely on that to overcome something called alcoholism. I'm going to use a sick mind to do my thinking for me. It will justify, rationalize every reason to pick up a drink again. Self-knowledge. I'm using my mind to think the drink through. We'll hear that in Alcoholics Anonymous. But how far is an insane mind going to take me to? Doesn't seem that bad. Remember page 24? We have this guy named Fred on page 39. And Fred is one of these guys, you know, everything's going good for him. Successful, nice family, everybody loves Fred. And one of the good things about this story, it doesn't point out Fred is this guy who's hanging out on the Bowery, who's been in 30 rehabs. This guy's like what we would call, if you will, a high-bottom kind of guy. Very successful. And the interesting thing about Fred is, you'll find out as we read, Fred can't even go with any of the proposals because he never takes step one. Fred doesn't even admit he's an alcoholic. He just feels he had a really bad experience and he's ashamed of it. And he's going to use shame or guilt or remorse to keep him away from drinking. Well, where does that come from? The thinking mind. It says, Fred is a partner in a well-known accounting firm. His income is good, has a fine home, happily married, the father promising children of college age. He has an attractive personality. He makes friends with everyone. Doesn't sound like me so far, right? Anyway, Fred, it says, we first saw Fred, and the we are people in AA, about a year ago in a hospital where he had gone to recover from a bad case of the jitters. Fred was coming off a drunk. It says it was his first experience of this kind, and he was much ashamed of it. Now, here's the hook. It says, far from admitting he was an alcoholic, he told himself he'd come to the hospital to rest his nerves, and there's the mind doing his thinking for him. I remember my first rehab I went into, I did the 28-day cured thing, and they, you know, told me a lot of about my issues, my triggers, my inner child, my dysfunctional family, my enablers, all these therapeutic words. The problem was this. Even if that stuff worked, it wouldn't in my case because I was far from admitting myself of being an alcoholic. How could I work with the proposals 2 through 12 when I can't even take one? With me? So Fred uses the word, he was much ashamed of it, so he's going to use that to keep him away. Skip down to the last, a couple of sentences down. It says, he made up his mind to quit drinking altogether. So Fred's using a sick mind to overcome a sick mind. It never occurred to him that perhaps he could not do so, in spite of his character and standing. Fred would not believe himself an alcoholic. Fred's not taking step one, much less accept a spiritual remedy for his problem. Flip over. It says he was interested and conceded that he had some of the symptoms, but was a long way from admitting he can do nothing about it himself. He was positive that this humiliating experience, plus the knowledge he had acquired, would keep him sober for the rest of his life. Self-knowledge would fix it, and we found out, or we're learning about, what self-knowledge would do. If having a humiliating experience, self-knowledge, remembering where I come from, thinking the drink through would work, then for me, and I speak for myself, the first time I got bit bad by alcohol, I would never have gone back. But where alcohol is involved, I become strangely insane. I don't have sound, rational thinking when it comes to picking up a drink. God has restored me to sanity. Page 40, right before the last paragraph, it says, I felt I had every right to be self-confident that it would only be a matter of exercising my willpower and keeping on my God. So in order for Fred, according to Fred, to stay away from a drink, he has to keep on his God. Could you imagine going through each day looking for this word we hear in AA sometimes, triggers, or my issues, keeping on God, watching, okay, stay away from a drink. But what he's going to find out in a very hard and rude way here is something called strange mental blank spots. Where if you know your triggers, you know your issues, you know what gets you drunk, you're going to use self-knowledge, what about a strange mental blank spot? Because if you have an alcoholic mind, it's going to happen. That's why a book makes the statement, we have no effective mental defense against the first drink. Page 41, right before the first paragraph begins, Fred tells a story. It says, it was the end of a perfect day, not a cloud on the horizon. Fred just finishes up a wonderful business day, success. Not a cloud on the horizon, everything's looking good. All his ducks are in a row. His external world looks wonderful right now. How many times have I had my ducks in a row and my internal condition was falling apart? It just didn't manifest yet. And that's what's happening with Fred. He's an alcoholic. He doesn't know it yet. Everything looks pretty good so far. He's headed back to his hotel, and then what happens? The door crosses his mind that a drink would be really nice about now. And that's exactly what happens. Bottom of page 41. He starts to recall what happened. He says, as soon as I regained my ability to think, I went carefully over that evening in Washington. Not only had I been off God, I made no fight whatever against the first drink. This time I had not thought of the consequences at all. And this is the strange mental blank spot, so much for thinking the drink through. I had commenced to drink as carelessly as though the cocktails were ginger ale. I now remembered what my alcoholic friends had told me, how they prophesied that if I had an alcoholic mind, I'd like you to underline this, the time and place would come, I would drink. Page 42. They said that though I did raise a defense, it would one day give way before some trivial reason for having a drink. Let's flip back to page 37 for a moment. Second paragraph, and this is what he's talking about. But there was always the curious mental phenomenon that parallel with our sound reasoning, there inevitably ran some insanely trivial excuse for taking the first drink. Our sound reasoning failed to hold us in check. The insane idea won out, and that's what happened to Fred. He says, I saw that willpower and self-knowledge would not help in those strange mental blank spots. Next paragraph, it says, two members of AA came to see me. They grinned, which I didn't like so much, and then asked me if I thought myself an alcoholic, if I were really licked this time. I had to concede both propositions. So Fred goes from not conceding himself an alcoholic to having another experience with alcohol, gets flat on his back, and now he concedes that he is an alcoholic. They piled on him heaps of evidence to the effect that an alcoholic mentality such as he had exhibited was a hopeless condition of what? Of mind and body, right? Two sentences down, it says, this process snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that I can do the job myself. So here's the question. Up until now, page 42, have what we've discussed snuffed out any flicker of conviction that I can do the job myself, that I can overcome alcoholism on my own? Or am I starting to feel screwed? If I'm having troubles in other areas of my life, remember I shared about alcoholism going underground and resurfacing in other areas, and those become our bedevilments, and they're tormenting me, they're harassing me, they're driving me to places that I really don't want to be in. And I've used self-reliance and my sick mind and a blocked spirit, if you will, to overcome that stuff. Maybe by going through this work, like I talked about, being current with this work and letting it meet you where you are, has this work so far snuffed out the last flicker of conviction that you could overcome eating disorder, experiencing fear sprees, sex sprees, money sprees, or am I still using self to overcome self? So my hope is that it snuffed out the last flick of conviction for you also in other areas of your life, the way it has done for me. It says they outlined the spiritual answer, step two, in a program of action, 3-12, which 100 of them had followed successfully. Though I had been a nominal churchman, their proposals were not intellectually hard to swallow. The program of action, though entirely sensible, was pretty drastic. It meant I would have to throw out several lifelong conceptions out the window. And so we opened this meeting with the lay aside prayer. He's talking about being rid of old ideas and conceptions, prejudices, all that had to go. Whether it be pertaining to God, religion, spirituality, it had to go. Those were the things that were blocking him, some of his obstacles. They had to go. And being at the bitter end, it's a lot easier for those things to go than if we're sitting comfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous, resting on our laurels, attached to a lot of things in here, which happens. We get reemergence of ego. The ego reconstructs and does the thinking for us. And the mind says, I don't need to let go of anything. I'm doing fine. But when I go home and close the lights and try to get to bed, I'm in turmoil, aren't I? Until I show up at the next meeting and I put on my AA game face and how you doing? I'm great. You know, one of the great freedoms I've come to find out is when if you're experiencing this power, and the word we hear in AA is on the beam, it's so much easier for me to tell someone, I'm not doing so well today. I'm struggling with this area of my life. Can I read you some inventory? That's freedom. Because there's no ego involved. When ego's involved, I will not let you in. I can't. It won't. It has to survive. It has to breathe. And if I share with you, it may die. An ego will fight for its life with us. Some really neat stuff coming up here. It says in the bottom of page 42, quite important was the discovery that spiritual principles will solve all my problems, and I'd like you to underline that. So he's not only talking about spiritual answer for alcohol, all his problems. When this stuff happens, this is done for me. It comes to me rather than from me. I can't will myself into letting this happen. I can do some work, but it takes me. It's brought to me by God. Bottom of page 43. Once more. So if you haven't gotten it yet, they're going to say, you know, like once more. The alcoholic at certain times has no effective mental defense against the first drink. Except in a few rare cases, neither he nor any other human being can provide such a defense. His defense, my defense, must come from a higher power. And that really is a summary, as I've learned and experienced, of pages 23 to 43. When he talks about the discovery that spiritual principles will solve all my problems, conventional AA will have you believe that just staying away from a drink is the beginning and end of it all. I didn't pick up a drink today, I'm a winner, as this is a society of non-drinkers, and that's all we have to be concerned with. As if we had something to do, I had something to do with me being separated. But he uses a word, Fred used the words, all my problems. Chapter 2, Agnostics, is going to talk about that also. It isn't only about the drink, it's about my life entirely surrendering to this power. So AA isn't just about, you know, staying away from a drink, because why would we maybe have to do all this work? It's about being separated, staying in the sunlight of the Spirit to stay separated, but it's about having a whole life turned to this power and having it revolutionized. Something my sponsor shared with me. The remedy of relying on human power is a liability and will not work with the real alcoholic. I'll say that again. The remedy of relying on a human power is a liability and will not work for an alcoholic. It is not a solution. It will not bring me to a spiritual revolution, spiritual experience, a transformation. It won't happen. So as we wrap up part of step one here, or step one, I'm going to move into step two, we found that unmanageability is before the drink as well as after the drink. my external world, external conditions are manifested by what's going on the inside. The thinking mind will be working for me to go back to a drink, not only while I'm drinking, but before I'm drinking, when I'm separated, out of a detox, out of a rehab, out of a jail cell. Unmanageability is going back to a drink and having no input into the decision that's made for me by this thing called alcoholism. Chapter 4, We Agnostics. Agnostic, what's an agnostic? What's an atheist? An atheist, denies that there is a God. An agnostic is one who believes that there's a God out there, but there's no way of proving it. That maybe there's a God out there, but he isn't working in my life. I think of me when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I was certainly agnostic. I had a lot of problems with God. I argued with God. I cursed God. So I knew he was there, but I knew he wasn't working in my life, and you couldn't prove to me the existence of this God. I just knew he was there. But he wanted nothing to do with me. And I come here and surrender to this process, and things are done for me by this God. Great thing about chapter 2 agnostics is we're going to find out how, where, and even why to find this power. How to find this power, where to find this power, and even why we should have an experience with this power, why we should find him. It answers lots of questions. Because we come out of step one saying, okay, you just told me based on my track record and who I am, an alcoholic, I'm drinking again. Step one tells me I'm drinking again. Well, you better give me a solution. And they bring us into the solution, step two. Came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore me to sanity. Which must mean I'm insane if I'm being restored to sanity. And for me, the insanity precedes the first drink. So I need to be restored to wholeness of mind and I'd be brought there. Great exercise to take a look at. Has it happened for me? Came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity, and then I come to believe in a power greater than myself based on experience. It isn't something out there that I'm trying to get to. Now I'm having an experience with it and I believe in it. You're drinking. I believe that works for you. You're pretty drunk. Then I drink it and I believe in it because I've had an experience with it. You see the difference? It says, in the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. That's the first question. Have I learned anything about alcoholism up until this point? Am I starting to think I'm an alcoholic if I had reservations going into this? We hope we have made clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. Two statements, let's turn them into questions. If when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, why? Because of my mind and my body. Or if when drinking and you're in the allergy, do you have little control of the amount you take? I sit and I answer those questions. If I do, I'm probably alcoholic. Remember, this is a self-diagnosis. And if that's the case, I may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. If I have identified with the mental obsession and the phenomenon called craving, the physical allergy, then probably no human power is going to work for me. But what will work is a spiritual revolution. And nothing less. Let's flip back to page 25 for a moment. Middle of the page. The great fact is just this and nothing less. That we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which has revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and toward God's universe. Back to page 44, please. To one who feels he's an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible, but continue as we are means disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. Do I feel I'm an alcoholic of the hopeless variety? And you're telling me so far that I either find God or drink and die. And those are pretty tough alternatives for some of us. You're telling me find God, and what kicks up in my mind when I first got here is, I have to become religious. And my conception of this whole thing called spirituality was distorted until I'm taken to this work and I see that it's nothing like that at all. So it's like, what are the alternatives here? Find God or drink and die. At first, some of us try to avoid the, it says, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or live on a spiritual basis are not easy alternatives to face. But it isn't so difficult. About half our original fellowship were exactly that type. At first, some of us tried to avoid the issue, hoping against hope we were not true alcoholics. But after a while, we had to face the fact that we must find a spiritual basis of life or else, and I'd like you to underline that. Perhaps it is going to be that way with you. Next paragraph. If a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life was sufficient to overcome alcoholism, many of us would have recovered long ago. And so, you know, let me think about ways I try to stop and control my drinking. The different books I try to read, the self-help books I try to read to stop drinking. Visiting different churches to stop drinking. Have people pray over me. I would change. I would grow a beard. I would shave. I'd dress different. I'd, you know, change haircuts. I mean, you name it. I tried it. Different girlfriends. I mean, anything to stop drinking. I'm going to be a good guy. I'll go to church on Sunday. And before I got to church, I realized I had a little bit left, and let me finish that off, and I don't make church. So none of that stuff worked for me. And it tells me, Peter, we found that such codes and philosophies ain't going to work, no matter how much you tried. We could wish to be moral, we could wish to be philosophically comforted, in fact, we could will these things with all our might, but the needed power wasn't there, and they're setting me up for what my problem and my solution is. It says our human resources, as marshaled by the will, were not sufficient, they failed utterly. And here's probably, for me, the most powerful sentence in this book, lack of power, that was my dilemma. And with power, my dilemmas are cast aside. It says, I had to find a power by which I could live, not just not drink. You see that? And it had to be a power greater than myself. But where, and here's the question, and how were we to find this power? So my book is going to start to tell me where and how. Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself which will solve your problem, and I'd like you to underline that. I'm at a meeting doing a seven-step pitch, and a woman says to me, well, it's easy for you. You've been doing this a long time to turn your defects to God and expect results. And she went on and on and on. She says, I can't find God. And I told her, he's not lost. And she says, I'm having a problem. I'm blocked with this power. What do I do? What do I do? Never picked up the big book, read a million self-help books, read a million, you know, religious and spiritual books, but never got directions on how to get integrated with this power. She was lacking power. And she was trying to use self and willpower to overcome defects and eventually stay away from a drink. And she was falling all the time. So I read her this, very simple, that this book will take me to a power and that power will solve my problem. You just connect the dots. We suit up and show up to this book, submit to the directions in this book. This book will take me to a power of my understanding, God, and that God will do for me what I can never do for myself. I will start to have an experience with it. It's ABC. I mean, it's that simple. This book will take me to God, and God will solve my problem. Does that mean that there's no God in the guy who's drinking right now? Of course there is. The guy in the Bowery right now drinking himself to death, the woman on the Bowery drinking herself to death has God also. I'm not in a better place, a better class than that person. The only difference is, that separates me from the guy or the woman on the Bowery tonight, is I've had an experience, been integrated with this power, like most of us. They're blocked. Why I got here, I don't know. That's the difference. For me to think the poor soul doesn't have God in him or her, well, that's arrogant. I've heard in AA, we're the chosen people. Does that mean God doesn't choose anyone else? Like, we're better? God, if you heard my first step, you know I'm not chosen. Jesus. Okay? Welcome. Let's continue. It says, that means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we're going to talk about God. And I love the fact that they don't shy away from this power. Here, difficulty arises with agnostics. Many times we talk to a new man or woman and watch his hope rise as we discuss his alcoholic problems and explain our fellowship. But their face falls when we speak of spiritual matters, especially when we mention God, for we have reopened the subject which our man thought he had neatly evaded or entirely ignored. Remember when Ebby showed up to Bill? And Ebby starts talking about God, and Bill goes right back to his old conception of God, and his mind snaps shut against it. And then Ebby tells him, Bill, choose your own conception. And Bill says it melts the icy intellectual mountain that he had built, your own conception of God. And that's what our book is talking about. I showed up here with old ideas of this power, and I thought God meant religion. And that's not what we're talking about. God meant the religion I was brought up with, very specific, certain ways to pray, when to go to church, and all this other stuff, all this religious dogma. And our book blows this wide open for anyone. It says, we know how we feel as we have shared his honest doubt and prejudice. Some of us have been violently anti-religious. To others, the word God brought up a particular idea of him, which someone had tried to impress them during childhood. And I know, you know, when I was in the grip of the grapes, anytime someone talked about God, I would try to push it aside or get away from those people. And now we're at the bitter end. We're confronted with this. Drink and die, find God, and be free. We couldn't duck the issue. I could not duck the issue anymore. Page 46, please. First full paragraph, it says, yes, we of agnostic temperament have had these thoughts and experiences. Let us make haste to reassure you. This is how. We found that as soon as we were able to lay aside prejudice, and I'm going to talk about this a lot in this chapter, lay aside prejudice, and express even a willingness to believe in a power greater than myself, and here's a promise, we commenced to get results, even though it was impossible for any of us to fully comprehend that power which is God. They're telling me here, if I lay aside old ideas and express even a willingness to believe, that I'm going to get results. What a great promise, especially if you're in here for the first time, wondering how am I going to do this. I'm willing to try this. I'm willing to believe in this power. They're telling me I'm getting results. Even though I can't comprehend or define God. I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, and I talked about how I start to have a relationship with God. And in that relationship, what I little by slowly do is conceptualize this power. And what I little by slowly do is box it in. I define my God. I have a conception of my God. I comprehend my God. All that does is limit my God's power because I'm using me to define or comprehend something that I can't. So they tell us at the beginning, even though I can't comprehend or define power, this power, 16 years later, I don't want to comprehend or define this power. It just is. All love, no opposite. All forgiving, no opposite. All tolerant, no opposite. I could see to the end of the room, my God sees way beyond that, and I start to conceptualize or define or comprehend. I think my God can only see as far as I can see. If that's the case, I'm in serious trouble. Many times I think God's not listening to my prayers, but it's like a little, if you have a child and they run out in the street and you pull them back and you tell them it's not good for you, they don't understand that until they get old and say, now I know why you didn't let me go on the street. Many things I'm thinking, God's not listening to my prayers and he knows much more than I do and sees things way ahead of me. I don't want to define or comprehend my God. I want to have an experience with my God. I want to have an experience with my God. I want to have an experience with my God. It says, much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. And let's stop there. I would hear people speaking at meetings talking about their God and say, I'll never get there. Or they had certain ways of believing. I said, I'll never get there. And they're telling me I don't have to do that. That I can have my own experience with this power, my own. God will put me on my journey. Our own conception, I like it underlined this because this is great news for us. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach. And at the beginning, some of us will use GOD, Group of Drunks, Good Orderly Direction. At the beginning, that's fine. I had a guy come to me, says, I don't have any conception of God. I said, that's great. Let's work with that. Just work with the power. It is. Are you willing? Yes or no? Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect the contact with Him. If you notice, a lot of times when you refer to God, it's capitalized. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a creative intelligence, God, a spirit of the universe, God, underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction. And here's the hook, what a condition, provided we took all the simple steps. So do I believe in the possible existence of this God, yes or no? We hear in Alcoholics Anonymous, excuse me, live life on life's terms, and that works for some people. I don't subscribe to that, based on what my next sentence tells me. I live life on God's terms. It's simple, easy, broad, roomy, inclusive, not exclusive. Life on life's terms, I can't pull it off. Some of us can. Life on life's terms for me means attached to an awful lot of things. I'm attached to my external world, and I need to have things go according to my plan. And I'm not willing to live on conditions other than my own. Life on life's terms. Doesn't work for me. It says, we found that God does not make too hard terms to those who seek Him. To us, the realm of the Spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never excluding or forbidding. To those who earnestly seek, am I seeking this power? It is open, we believe, to all men. So there's no checkpoint at the door. You don't have to be born into a certain religion. Are you willing, yes or no? And God's arms are open wide for anyone, anyone. This paragraph, I'm sitting with a guy who was in this country a short time. And I'm working with him in this chapter, and he had a problem with God. And not that he had a problem with the idea of God. He just felt that based on what he had done, God wanted nothing to do with him, and that he had to believe a certain way. And I said, that's not true. Those are old ideas and old conceptions that you have. And I sat with him and I read this to him. And this guy was a pretty big, strappy guy. And I read this to him and I broke it down to him as I did for you just now. And this guy broke in front of me. Tears rolled down his face and there was a shift in his being as I read this to him because he said to me, I feel hope for the first time in my whole life. Based on just this piece. He was willing. And I told him, that's all you need. Are you willing? And God will do for you what you can't do for yourself. Are you willing? He had these, what he felt were very limited ideas of this God. He was using Group of Junks to get all the direction. He was doing whatever AA told him to do. That spirit was enough to carry him. There was a shift in this guy. I never saw anything like it. Next page says, when therefore we speak to you of God, we mean your own conception of God, and please underline that, because that's what Ebby told Bill. This applies to other spiritual expressions which you find in this book. Do not let any prejudice you may have against any spiritual terms deter you from honestly asking yourself what they mean to you. This is all we needed at the start to commence spiritual growth and to affect our first conscious relation, I'd like you to circle the word relation, with God. As we understood Him. So I'm starting to have an experience with this power, which makes what follows very simple. Afterward, we found ourselves accepting many things, which then seemed entirely out of reach. Why? Because I'm starting to have an experience with it. It's not just talk by other people at a meeting. I'm having my own experience with God, so when you talk about your experiences, I can believe like you believe. I can identify with what you're telling me. I shared an experience at a conference in a meditation, and there were a few people who thought, you know, I had my head, you know, screwed on backwards when I shared this meditation experience. But a lot of people there knew exactly what I was talking about because of their own experiences with God in meditation. That was growth, but if we wished to grow, we had to begin somewhere. So we used our own conception, however limited it was. We have a couple of questions. We have questions here to be answered, And later on, we have choices to be made when we get to that page. And here's the questions. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question. Do I now believe right now, I like you to circle the word now, or am I even willing, circle the word willing, to believe that there is a power greater than myself? And that's a question we sit with. Do I now believe, or am I even willing to believe? And back to what I talked about when we first started tonight is, when we first come in here, sure, I'm willing. I'll do it, whatever it takes. I'm willing to believe in anything other than me. Then we're around here a little while and we have experiences with this power and we go through the work again and we sit with this question. Am I relying on old experiences? A great exercise is to make a list of things that I don't believe God's working in my life with. Where don't I believe right now that God's working? What sort of bedevilments am I experiencing right now? And I think my power can get me past them. Great exercise where I don't believe God's working right now. As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is even willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. Another promise that has been repeatedly proven among us. And I'd like you to circle the word proven. If something's proven, these people have had experiences with it then. That upon the simple cornerstone, we got all these stones in place for building this archway. A wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Please flip over to page 48. 1, 2, 3, about 5 sentences down. And so though some of us resisted, we found no great difficulty in casting aside such feelings. Faced with alcoholic destruction, we soon became as open-minded on spiritual matters as we had tried to be on other questions. In this respect, alcohol was the great persuader. It finally beat us into a state of reasonableness. I'll never survive what I did to get me in here, but I'm grateful for everything that happened to me, for every last drop that I drank, because it brought me to a state of reasonableness, a place of willingness to do anything 16 years later after being separated. I was faced with alcoholic destruction and I knew it. And I sought this with the desperation of a drowning man. Am I seeking this power still with that desperation? Page 49. We're talking about the mind a lot over the last few weeks and self-knowledge. And one of the things we worship lots of things that get in the way. Our book uses words to describe the doubts we have. Use the word doubt, skepticism, worship of other things, pomp, calamity. Well, one of the things that we do, we also worship our mind. Page 49, it says, instead of regarding ourselves as intelligent agents, spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation, we agnostics and atheists choose to believe that our human intelligence was the last word, the alpha and the omega, the beginning and end of it all. Rather vain of us, wasn't it? So I'll worship my mind as if it's a god. And I've learned I am not my mind. I am not my mind. Mm-hmm. Let's go over to page 50. I'm sorry, page 49, last paragraph. It says, we have traveled this dubious path, beg of you to lay aside prejudice, they mention that again, even against organized religion. We learn that whatever the human frailties of various faiths may be, those faiths have given purpose and direction to millions. People of faith have a logical idea of what life is all about. Actually, we used to have no reasonable conception whatever. We used to amuse ourselves by cynically dissecting spiritual beliefs and practices when we might have observed that many spiritual-minded persons of all races, colors, and creeds were demonstrating a degree of stability, happiness, and usefulness which we have sought ourselves. Page 50, instead we looked at the human defects of these people and sometimes used their shortcomings as a basis of wholesale condemnation. We talked of intolerance while we were intolerant ourselves. Do I do that in Alcoholics Anonymous? I've had an experience with this book, but what about my brother Raye, who gets up to the podium and says he never read the book and has a different approach? Am I sitting in the back rather than being awake, sound asleep, and character assassinate and gossip? I've done it. So I talk about tolerance from a podium, and a guy gets up there, and I will disagree with him about his approach, but he seems to be where he's at in a good place, and I'm going to gossip about that speaker and call up my sponsor. You don't believe this guy who spoke, and call a few amen. You don't believe what I heard last night. You know Frank from so-and-so meeting? What's that about? I would see people going to church or other religious communities seem going to their place of worship. And one of my old ideas was the only people who went to religious centers, if you will, churches, synagogues, whatever, were people who were old and women. My mom went to church, and they usually took their children. Real men don't show up in church. It's weak and cowardly. Real men take the bull by the horns and are John Wayne. Men don't pray. Men don't need God. And I'm serious about it. I mean, I really believe that. I don't anymore. Because God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. I was completely leveled, broken, if you will, broken internally. And I turned to this power, which I ridiculed and cursed. And he makes me reborn, resurrected. And I pray and I meditate and I go to my religious community. I do everything I need to do. Transformation. Next paragraph. Two paragraphs down. It says, on one proposition, however, these men and women are strikingly agreed. Every one of them has gained access to and believes in a power greater than themselves. This power has in each case accomplished the miraculous, the humanly impossible. Next paragraph, it says, here are thousands of men and women worldly indeed. They flatly declare that since they have come to believe in a power greater than themselves, step two, to take a certain attitude toward that power, three, and to do certain simple things, 4-9, there has been a revolutionary change in their living and thinking. If my thinking changes, my living conditions will change. In the face of collapse and despair, in the face of total failure of their human resources, and that's what I just explained what happened to me a moment ago, they found that a new power, peace, and happiness and sense of direction flowed into them. It flowed into them like this aqueduct flowing with this power. This happened soon after they wholeheartedly met a few simple requirements. So this talks about why. Once confused and baffled, the seemingly futility of existence, they show the underlying reasons why they were making a heavy going of life. I'd like us to pay attention to this next sentence. Leaving aside the drink question, they tell why living was so unsatisfactory. So, separated from alcohol, in Alcoholics Anonymous, how am I doing? How's my life? Am I running around in Alcoholics Anonymous untreated, even though I'm separated? Leaving the drink question aside, what are my living conditions like? It says they show how the change came over them. When many hundreds of people are able to say that the consciousness of the presence of God is the most important fact of their lives, they present the powerful reason why one should have faith. Can we flip back to page 25? It says the central fact of our life is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we can never do by ourselves. So you see how it set up a promise, and now they're talking about it again in our book. Page 52. We come to this power, and it releases us of alcohol. We're separated. What about our living conditions? Am I turning to that power for my living conditions? Do I still have the same willingness to turn to this power for my living conditions? What's my attitude like in turning to this power? God, you take care of my alcohol problem, but I got the money, the sex, the food, and the rest of it under control. You leave that alone. And then I flatline with it. Do I have the same attitude of willing to be changed on God's terms with these other areas as I did with alcohol? Page 52, in the middle of the page, it talks about our bedevilments, and those are things that torment or harass me, cause worry, frustration. It says we have to ask ourselves why we shouldn't apply to our human problems the same readiness to change our point of view. The same readiness I went to God with, Father, please take this alcohol from me. We're going to take statements and turn them into questions. It says we were having trouble with personal relationships. Currently, am I? Am I having a problem with a relationship with God and myself even? How are my personal relationships with others? How's my emotional nature? Am I a prey to misery and depression? You know what that's like. You're in your house, you're doing some chores, you're driving your car, everything's fine, and then all of a sudden it's on you from nowhere. Misery, depression, worry, anger, frustration, despair, whatever it may be, about any topic, you fill in the blank, it's on you and you can't get out. Am I a prey to that stuff? Am I unhappy? Am I full of fear? Do I have a feeling of uselessness? Do I feel like I really can't be of help to other people? Am I experiencing some of that stuff? Do I think if I'm experiencing any of that, any of those current unmanageability questions, do I think that self can get me past that? Or do I need a power greater myself to take me past that also? Do I think I could use self to get past that? Or do I believe I need a power greater than me to take me past that? And based on that and the time, we'll stop here for tonight. And let's consider those questions. How, where, and why to find a higher power in our book. Let's sit with that. Current stuff. Thank you for listening.